In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, January 25th, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. And it's an all-Allen show this week. It is Alan Schwatkin of the Professional Services Council. It's great to see you, as always, my friend.
Always a pleasure to be here, Francis.
And Alan Power of the Sands Institute is also here. And you also, sir, it's great to see you, as always.
You as well.
Thank you. And just for the sake of today's show, I think I'm going to change my name to Alan, because it just seems like the right thing to do with having both of you in the room. You have chosen and submitted your three most important federal news stories of the week. You've ranked them in order from three down to one, and you can see them later at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll start with
number three.
The third most important federal news story of the week is selected by Alan Schwatkin, is from GovExec. The headline is, Agencies Could Communicate Better During Rulemaking, GAO says. And this is, regulation is an area that this administration has gotten mixed reviews on, shall we say. Is that fair to say, Alan?
It's a true statement. And why I selected this is, in the government contracts world, to the extent that I know anything, it's in that little area, is an area of regulation. And so the extent to which the government publishes information about regulations gives the public an opportunity to comment on those and then takes those comments into account is critical in the government contracts. GAO looked across a whole range of regulations and found that there was not enough opportunity for public comment. Unfortunately, they only identified one procurement regulation dating from 2008. On the other hand, we've done our own evaluation at the Professional Services Council and found just in 2012 dozens of regulations, acquisition regulations, that are published either an interim rule with a subsequent request for comment or no proposed rule published at all.
The first thing that I thought of when I saw this come out on Tuesday was, has anybody looked at the accountability, the enforcement of the changed regs? If the government publishes something and you don't know that's changed because there's been no notice about it and you continue to operate as you had under the previous regulations and then you get caught doing so, what are the consequences and how severe are they? And I wonder if anybody's looked at that aspect of it yet.
By and large, the government contracts operate prospectively, so very seldom do rules have a retroactive effect. That's the good news. The bad news is they're coming out at such a velocity and change in the acquisition system that it's hard enough on the compliance side, but I really worry about the capabilities on the government side to keep pace with these change regulations. There have been a variety of tools and techniques being considered to facilitate that. And one other point I'd make is I published a short article a couple of weeks ago talking about regulation by deviation. This is a technique used in the government contracts world where federal agencies will issue a deviation for the standard rules that's unique to one agency or one set of activities, and we're seeing a significant growth in that area as well. So it's another way in which the government acquisition process is sort of invisible until it's after the fact.
The Office of OIRA is cited in this GAO report. Charles Clark's article in GovExec says GAO recommended the director of OMB through OIRA consult with the Administrative Conference of the United States and issue clarifying guidance. OMB says, we're doing a fine enough job of that already. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and by and large, I think there's work that OIRA can do. They review all the regulations, including the procurement regulations. I think they can hold agencies accountable. Ask the question, why the need for an interim rule? Why not the request for a proposed rule in advance? It's an area that we've been pushing for quite some time.
Alan Paller's third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is, Agencies Could Communicate Better During Rulemaking. I'm sorry, Alan Schwatkin. Yes. I'm doing it already.
It's okay, Alan.
Let's get it together, Alan.
Yeah, no kidding. That's Alan Schwatkin's third most important story of the week. Alan Paller, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the NASDAQ website. right? The headline is General Dynamics earnings fall short, shares dive. And it strikes me that maybe the story here is not so much the actual numbers for General Dynamics as it is where this sector might be headed moving forward based on what we're seeing budget-wise here in town.
Right. And the Lockheed announced theirs yesterday. They were also down. So it's a characteristic of this particular industry. And what's not well understood is the big money in those places, the missile systems and the UAVs, aren't going down very fast right now. So, and they will within about 2 years. And every one of the big defense contractors have announced that they've got two new growth areas. And they've announced one of them is health, or one of them is energy, or one of them is clean energy, or one of them something else, but one of them is cyber. So they're all thinking that cyber is going to replace the other business. And GD is a particularly troublesome one because they lost their biggest cyber deal to Lockheed this year. But it is not going to replace – the existing cyber business is not actually going to replace the – other business, because a lot of the cyber business right now is this FISMA reporting. Mm-hmm. They're making the latest estimate is $1.8 billion actually a year in that work. That's going away.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a new competition where their boards of directors think that they're going to make a lot of money on cyber to replace their missile systems. The cyber people are terribly frustrated because they came in to protect the business, and now they're making the cyber people into salesmen so they can go out and sell cyber. But they're not – they're selling the wrong thing. They're trying to sell, we can help you by adding information technology. What's missing and Mike McConnell is right on this. A lot of the real thought leaders in it are right on this. What's missing is the technical talent, not people who can talk about cybersecurity, not what we call the frequent flyers. Have you heard that line?
I have.
It comes from the deputy secretary of DHS. In cybersecurity, there are a lot of people who can talk about it, like frequent flyers, but if you put them in the cockpit, they would crash the plane.
That's right.
We have 100,000 frequent flyers in cybersecurity. We probably have a few thousand real people. So it's the competition for that talent. And what I'm seeing is the replacement of that revenue is going to come in the competition for talent. So far, Washington Post had a wonderful article. They called it fratricide. They stole it from each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work. It's the building the pipeline that's going to be the future. And which of those companies comes up with the best pipeline, not saying they have one, but actually putting out high-volume people through their training programs, that's what will set them apart. That's what will keep them alive.
I had Ken Herbert on the program yesterday, who's an analyst that follows the defense and information technology sector from the West Coast. And I love to get perspective from somebody who's not here in town on an ongoing basis. And we talked about earnings season. And I said, why is it that these companies continue to believe that they're uniquely qualified to weather this storm? Because one of what I thought was even more telling than the results from the companies was their guidance for the rest of this year and for the companies that's starting to provide perspectives on 2014. And they're all saying, well, this is going to be tough, but we'll shore up our business here or there or someplace else. And my thought was the same thing that you're suggesting, Alan, which is what makes you think, maybe rightfully so, that you're going to be the one company among all of these others that's figured it out?
I met with one of them, all their business development people yesterday, and we listened. I was brought in by a senior White House official, so they wanted to really do the briefing right. And everything they went over was stuff you can get anywhere. They thought it was unique because they have no experience in cybersecurity. So they think their interesting idea is something that's unique, but their customers know it isn't. And it's really sort of dangerous for the stockholders of those companies.
Alan Powler's third most important federal news story of the week is from NASDAQ. The headline is General Dynamics earnings fall short, shares dive. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And the second most important federal news story of the week from the Allen Collection next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE.
Military members receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time, also receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention the branch of the military for which you serve or visit Sprint.com/DOD. Retired military and veterans are eligible for Sprint's military discount and offers under the branch in which they served.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The Bible says the borrower is slave to the lender. In other words, when you owe people money, they own you. So are you tired of being a slave to your mortgage and all your other debts? Just think, a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest, and the banks get it all. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. I've shown over 2 million people how to eliminate their debts, including their mortgage, credit card debts, car payments, and student loans. And now I want to show you. So let me rush you a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible. Just call 1-800-400-8380. You'll discover powerful debt-eliminating secrets that will help you break free from being a slave to your debts. The truth is, you can get out of debt, no matter how much money you owe or how much money you make. For a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible, call now while a limited number of copies are still available. Call 1-800-400-8380. For your Debt-Free Bible, call 1-800-400-8380.
The military is trying out a new type of boot camp for the mind. I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, we'll speak with an Army captain on expanding meditation programs in the services. And Dr. Eric Green used to map genes. Now the head of the National Human Genome Research Institute is NIH's top data scientist. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown today features the 3 most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Alan Schvatkin of the Professional Services Council and Alan Power of the SANS Institute. And we're up to, come on, guys. Come on.
There we go.
It must be some kind of a payment issue. The second most important federal news story of the week from Alan Schvatkin is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. Headline, GSA named Sharp new FAS commissioner. I wonder if, Alan, the significance of this appointment was Mr. Sharp himself or just the fact that Dan Tangerlini is putting, I hesitate to use the term, but I will anyway, his people in place. He's chosen the Federal Building Service Commissioner and now the Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner. What do you think about that?
Well, I selected it in part for that reason. In part, I think it is showing that Dan intends, and I hope he does stay as the administrator of GSA. I think it's important that he continue on with his efforts to refocus the agency in an austerity environment, as opposed to a growth marketplace that we've had in the past. I know Tom. Tom's a friend of mine. I'm no Tom Sharp, as that line would go. But I think this is reflective of both the importance of the role that GSA can play, the role it plays as its own in the interagency world, and then in the emerging area and the growth around strategic sourcing. And Tom has lots of personal experience, both his government and his private sector. I'm excited about the change, in part because I know him, and I'm excited about the prospects for what could happen with GSA.
Now, some of the things, Alan Powler, that impact your world in the cybersecurity don't run through the Federal Acquisition Service, but are affected by some of the policies that are set at NFAS and so on. What impact does something like this have among the people that work in your business?
The value of GSA is in buying across government. So for us, right now, everything you buy is sold to you. Somebody will come in and say, you have a problem in leaking data, and we have a data leakage stopper. And you say, oh, my God, I have a problem. You run up to your boss. You ask for that. And then the next week, somebody else comes in, and the boss said, didn't I give you something last week? Yeah, but we've got a new problem. It's a silly, broken system. And what GSA has the capacity to do, working with the new DHS guys, is actually to do acquisitions across government, which will bring the cost down by between 50 and 90%, lowering the cost of cybersecurity for all the agencies. Right now, it's far too expensive to get anything useful. So GSA probably has the core role in making federal systems defensible. Every contractor hates the idea. Every vendor hates the idea, because if they don't win the big one, they lose all the little ones. So you're getting massive, what we call incoming missiles trying to stop GSA and DHS from doing it. But that's the big breakthrough. If GSA can stand with a strong spine, and I'm hoping the new guys will, and DHS doesn't get shot, the two of them together can actually move federal security radically up.
Is there no way you could build that model, though, that he's talking about, Alan Shvatkin, in order to be able to still maintain a competitive marketplace? Or does a scenario like that have to be one shot in or out?
No, it doesn't. In fact, while I love GSA, I'm also a big fan of competition in the federal marketplace. Alan makes an important part about separating the standards and the requirement side from the acquisition methodologies. If you've got the standards and requirements clear, then you can use a number of techniques to acquire that.
Mm-hmm.
GSA has the advantage of already being a government-wide familiarity with a lot of federal agencies, but it certainly doesn't have to have an exclusive franchise in that, in my view.
That sounds like the FedRAMP model. Am I off? Is that analogy not correct?
I think it's close. FedRAMP is going to validate the capabilities, and then the agencies are going to find the best method to acquire.
Mm-hmm. The ability of agencies to just buy cybersecurity off a schedule, I mean, essentially is what it sounds like you would like to see. Is that far off, capability-wise?
It's here now. The prices are 10 times too high. We don't have any forward pricing in security, so they sell to the rich guys, and they can't afford to bring the prices down so everybody can afford it. So I'm looking for a time when we have laptops that cost $1,000 instead of laptops that cost $25,000. We're in security. If you wanted the equivalent of a secure something, you'd pay 10 to 20 times as much as you should if everybody were buying it. The vendors can get rich if we buy in volume, but somebody's got to buy in volume.
Mm-hmm. How do we put that together to make everybody understand that it will work for everybody? Because it sounds like it will work for everybody under the scenario that you're making.
In the United States, it will be hard. We're getting traction in Europe. You just heard the announcement this week from the European Union that they're going to be using procurement as the key technique in lowering the cost of cybersecurity. I think the states will do it here before the federal government does. Federal government is so owned by its contractors that everything they try to do gets somebody calls a senator and it breaks. So I don't see the federal government leading, but I'm hoping they will.
Alan, you said that you know Tom and he's a friend of yours. Tell us what we can be as predictive about Tom's tenure at as FAST commissioner as you can.
Well, his experience, he's a keeper. He doesn't jump jobs a lot. And even at the senior levels. He knows how to work with a bureaucracy. He knows how to lead organizations. And I think those are two very important components of the new job as FAST commissioner. His acquisition background will serve him well, but he doesn't have to be on the buying side. It's acquisition policy. It's leadership more so than anything else. I had the privilege of working with him on the multiple award schedule advisory panel a year and a half ago. We've had other engagements with him. Back to Alan's point about the buying activities, one key in that is the strategic sourcing. It is leveraging the government's resources. We saw the results of that come through in office products and express delivery services and some others. I'm sure you've talked much more about it than I've ever looked at it. But there's no reason why it can't move up the technology chain. It is harder. There's a lot of entrepreneurship and a lot of husbanding within the agencies of those unique requirements that they think are specialized to them. Tom has a very professional yet firm way of breaking through some of those bureaucracies.
Jason Miller's story about the appointment of Tom Sharp as the new Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner is Alan Schwatkin's choice as the second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown. It's linked up along with all of our stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Paller's choice in the second spot this week is next on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The next sequestration deadline is less than 2 months away, and that has put agencies in full-on preparation mode. The Office of Management and Budget and the Pentagon have both said unpaid furloughs for federal employees may be a necessity to deal with the potential budget cuts. Hiring freezes, early retirements, and cuts to travel and conference spending are also on the table. Agency leaders can get more information on furloughs through the Office of Personnel Management.
When did you last review your life insurance coverage? WEPA, a nonprofit association, enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. As a superior alternative or supplement to FEGLI, WEPA provides more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more about WEPA and its premium refund program that has returned over $65 million to its policyholders since 1996. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-700-6518. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-700-6518. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-700-6518. That's 1-800-700-6518. 1-800-700-6518.
This week I've been looking at solar chargers for my iPhone. Last week I was out and about and my iPhone went dead as a doornail. And I thought to myself, you know, there's all this sunlight. Why couldn't I get a solar charger for this? And there are a number of solar chargers out there. Now, the charge time varies anywhere from 6 hours to 12 hours, depending on which one you get. But at least you can get something going.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Exercise and living longer. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, a study indicates that people who spend more time being physically active spend more time on this earth. At the National Institutes of Health, Stephen Moore looked at life expectancy and physical activity in more than 650,000 people. Moore found those who did only a little still gained a lot.
Even a very low level of activity, equivalent to about 10 minutes of walking per day, was associated with a gain of almost 2 years of life expectancy, regardless of body weight level.
On the high end of his study, those who did the equivalent of about 45 minutes or more of walking lived about 4 years longer than those who were not active. So people who were inactive, especially if they were also overweight, died sooner. The study was in the journal PLOS Medicine. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every week features two people who are experts in the world of the federal government, choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week, according to them, and ranking them in order, counting them down in the studio with me every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 to AM. Today, it is Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and Alan Paller of the SANS Institute. And Alan Paller, your second most important federal news story of the week is from CIO.com. The headline is Obama's Executive Order on Cybersecurity, Fighting Words to GOP. And I guess it's appropriate to call this an update rather than news, because from the very day that the administration talked about an executive order on cyber, the Republicans in the House especially were really unhappy about it.
I picked this one not because of what it said in the title, but because there's a religious argument about regulation that's not really driven by the members of the GOP. It's more driven by large corporate men in Washington, few women, mostly men. And these are people who are earning between $270,000 and $1 million a year, and their bonuses on top of that are 100%. So they're sort of the minimum guys make about $500,000, the best make $2.5-3 million. They're not getting paid that much money to advise the White House and to advise Congress without making their companies money. So the question is, why is all that money being spent? And it's exactly the same as the money that stopped seatbelts and airbags for years and years and years. They had huge amounts of money. People should be allowed to drive their car any way they want. They shouldn't have to have seatbelts, and maybe they shouldn't. But that's the religious argument. This isn't about cybersecurity. The difference is, in cybersecurity, we're not getting a lot of people dying, and you're not seeing gory accident photos. And we'll get to that one when we talk about the next story. But what I wanted to do in this story is sort of bring out this dynamic underneath. If anybody shines a light on these people's names, they will go ballistic. And we're keeping them quiet for right now. But they are getting paid a fortune to hollow out first the Senate bill. And then when they got done hollowing out the Senate bill, they destroyed the Senate bill by going to the Chamber of Commerce and saying, let's stop it. Now they're doing exactly the same thing at the EO. I've been talking to the guys who've been making these decisions, and each representative of each company comes in and says, if you'll only take out that one piece, we'll probably be able to back you. And each of them has a different one. When they got all done, there are no pieces left in it. So it doesn't really matter whether the president signs the executive order or not, because when they got done with it, these hugely paid people got done with it, it's an empty document.
What's your take on the whole conversation about cyber legislation, executive order, and all of that, Alan?
I don't subscribe to the conspiratorial theory, or maybe I'll call it that Alan suggests. And there's no question that there's advocacy, and that line between advocacy, self-interest, and national interest is always a tough one to find. We've spent a lot of time with those same folks in both the executive branch and the Congress. I think we're missing an opportunity to take even small steps in cyber as we continue to fight between whether we should have regulation or legislation. We need some standards. We need that minimum threshold of capabilities to protect the government's interest, to protect contractors' interest. There are intrusions by the thousands every day, and the longer it takes to get there, whether it's by regulation or legislation, is we're agnostic. We need that leadership to come, and if it comes through an executive order, we'd welcome that. if it can come through legislation, we'd welcome that too. There are some things that only legislation can do, only the Congress can do. They can address the liability questions of a breach from breach notifications or intrusions. They can address the implications for stockholders of companies who have those. Those are the areas that we need attention to. And then the competitive marketplace will work, and even those who think they've won because a word or phrase is in or out will find the competitive marketplace changing rapidly once that standard is out there.
You actually hit exactly the forward-looking path. I believe that this will all – we will get a lot better through contracts. Well, two ways, contracts and public service commissions. So the power industry is the first ones to take up the idea of we're going to have to accept standards at some level. We don't – the feds are being stopped. Anything that would have happened on the federal level is dead. But – the power industry themselves and other industrial control systems guys have gotten together under a guy named Mike Asante, who is the nation's top person in this field. He was the one who discovered the vulnerability that was used in Stuxnet and things like that. So they're actually setting new benchmarks, first for skills. If you're going to work in cybersecurity in the power industry, you have to meet these standards. And second, for what does it mean to have effective security in the power industry. And we think that there will be – that states will say, if you want to sell us power, you have to have that. They think it will start there. And public service commissions will say if you want to do it. And then there will be sort of a minimum standard of due care. And it will be hard for someone else to buy something if from another company where they're going to connect their computers without saying you have to meet this minimum standard of due care too. So I think it's actually contract led by public service commissions and then contracts that will change it. And with Asante in the lead, no one's like him in the country. I think you're going to see a very rapid change.
As critical as I keep hearing this problem is, do we have time for an organic solution like that to take root all over the country, though? Or do we need some kind of a standard like Alan Shvatkin's talking about in a more timely manner?
The only argument right now is whether or not argument in the senior national command authority kind of level is when the first hugely damaging large numbers of deaths attack happens. And so there's a discussion between 6 and 18 months or more like 3 years to 4 years. But that's the only fight that we know how to do it. We can do it to other people. Therefore, we're much more vulnerable than other people. So the sense is that at some point that'll happen. That will actually accelerate all of the change. My belief is we just have to be as ready as we can, because the powers pushing back at the federal level are so enormously powerful that you can't get the government to lead in this area at all.
What's the role for the community that will go with a standards-based approach, as you've talked about, Alan Shvatkin, but also allowing room for the advocacy and so on that you talked about to say, listen, we're in this for a reason also?
Well, there's no one-size-fits-all. And so while the National Institutes of Standards and Technology has developed a whole book around cyber capabilities and minimum standards, and the National Security Agency has them, and many companies have them as well. I know you've had on the show previously some of the Homeland Security industry sectors talking about those capabilities. There is a difference in what you need in the electrical sector from the water sector and others. I do agree with Alan about the value of the competitive marketplace, and think back as consumers. Some people might still have a beta machine, but the industry went to a different standard, and pretty soon everybody gravitated to that. Bluetooth, same way. I think the marketplace can get there competitively on a voluntary basis, which many people are suggesting, or they can get there by being led through the federal procurement system. I'm a proponent of using that marketplace to help draw some of that capability.
One little thing. The statement, one size doesn't fit all, is obviously accurate. It is also the single most damaging statement made in cybersecurity. And the reason is that although the power is different from water and water is different from DOD, it's only different at the 15% at the top. Inside, they're all running Windows boxes or Unix boxes. They're all hooked up to the internet. They all have Word and they all have Flash. And so 85% of the risk is actually common. And when you hear the words, one size doesn't fit all, that allows everyone to go off and do their own risk assessments and delay things. So what Tony Sager is leading, this international consortium on let's fix the 85% right now, is Tony was the head of all the technical people at the NSA till June. And he's just extraordinary. And his consortium for cybersecurity action is really what's getting to that international standard on minimum acceptable performance in cybersecurity. And it won't solve the last 15%. But it'll make it really hard for people to break in.
Alan Powler's second most important federal news story of the week is from CIO Magazine and CIO.com. It's headlined Obama's Executive Order on Cybersecurity, Fighting Words to GOP, and you can read it now, linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The number one top of the chart story from Alan Shvatkin and Alan Powler, next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week. My guests this week on the countdown, Alan Powler of the SANS Institute and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council, and we are up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Alan Powler, is from the Threat Post blog, and the headline is DHS Secretary Warns of Potential Cyber Attacks. And this also is, Alan, a story that could have come out this week or 2 weeks ago or 2 months ago or 2 years ago. And my only fear with a story like this is that we'll be lulled into this sense of, if it was going to happen by now, it could have happened and we'll lose focus. Is that a legitimate fear on my part, do you think?
Well, you're right about it being an old story, Francis. It's actually a decade old. When Dick Clark used to say that there was a cyber Pearl Harbor coming, the reaction to that sentence comes out in these words. He's just saying that because, meaning he just wants to pass, she just wants to pass the legislation. He just wants more money. They just want to set up a new department. There's always a just. So I wanted to add, my wife gave this to me this morning, Financial Times today. Here's a woman who doesn't want anything. She writes general stories for the Financial Times, and she's saying it's time to break the wall of silence on escalating cyber attacks. It's page 20 in Financial Times today. We are in a world where, you mentioned it, Alan, where there are a lot of attacks. What we are not saying out loud is how damaging the attacks are. And we're not saying it out loud because it's like our children have head lice. We don't say our children
have
head
lice. How did you find out? I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
My son's
fine. So we're in a situation where we're not seeing how bad it is. And because we're not seeing how bad it is, we're not fixing it. And every time somebody says it's bad, they're saying it in context. In this case, it's the context of the legislation. So people discount what you're saying. The guy who's not trying to do legislation, Jonathan Evans, who runs MI5, never gives public speeches. And he gave a public speech last summer saying, this is the worst I've ever seen. It's accelerating at a massive rate. So we've got lots of people who like to take shots at other people by sort of argumentum ad hominem. The only reason she's saying that is, and I want people to get off that one, because if they don't believe the attacks are real, they're not going to fix them. And right now, a lot of people are sort of pretending. When they hear someone saying, well, she's just saying it because she's trying to get the bill passed, they think it's not true. It's true. It's really dangerous. And as I said before, maybe we have to wait until the lights go out and then we'll fix it, but I hope not.
And if we accept Alan Schbach in the framework of what Alan is talking about, that's not necessarily a reason to impugn the motives, because it's entirely reasonable and possible that Secretary Napolitano is saying this because she's advocating for the legislation that Senator Carper, Rockefeller, and Feinstein are sponsoring. But maybe she's doing that because she thinks it's a really good idea and important for the country. And that kind of thing seems to get lost in the shuffle sometimes.
Well, it does. And she's got the responsibility for all of the government minus the Defense Department, the cybersecurity capabilities. So, as I said earlier, it is a question of action. And at least from the Professional Services Council, we're agnostic as to whether that action comes in the form of an executive order, departmental leadership, or legislation. We know that there are only so much that can be done administratively, only so much that can be done by executive order, and some has to be done by legislation. But as we were talking earlier about the standards, if we have so much commonality, let's at least do the common and then worry about the incremental next.
Well, and you could say that, too, about the elements of the legislation, because there are a number of elements of the legislation that were acceptable to Republicans and Democrats and were acceptable to the House and Senate, and still nothing happened because of different approaches. And that turns it into a political and logistics conversation rather than a national security or intellectual property safety or any of the other aspects of cybersecurity discussion. Is that fair to say,
That's
Alan?
That's completely fair. And Alan, My friend here, Alan, has it exactly right. If we're going to fix this, we're going to do it with procurement. Spend $70-some billion a year on IT. We can actually do what GM did to electronic commerce. In June of 81, they said to every supplier, if you want to still be doing business with us in December, you have to have an electronic commerce capability. And it was amazing. In December, the electronic commerce industry had started. We can do exactly the same thing in cybersecurity. If the federal government says, if you would like to do business with us, you have to meet these standards because we're going to connect our computers to you. We're no game playing, and this stuff Tony Sager is doing, these minimum critical controls, they aren't hard to do, they aren't expensive, they're just basically hygiene, and for the 85%, we're there, but somebody's got to do the procurement, and that takes real leadership.
Where do you want to see that leadership come from?
I would have liked to have seen it from DHS. Because they sort of have the responsibility. They should lead by example. I haven't seen it there.
That is industry ready to go along with something like that, do you think? A structure like that where the agencies, where the government says as one voice, if you want to do businesses with us, great, we're ready to do it, but it's under these circumstances.
The answer, I think, is a qualified yes. We've seen regulations issued, procurement regulations issued by the Federal Acquisition Regulatory Council that would establish these basic hygiene standards. And so there was very little opposition to those provisions. As the rule got broader and broader, it failed to talk about, or it didn't properly address other issues like liability and reporting. And so, again, a focus on the core rather than on the totality, I think you'd find broad agreement in the federal marketplace.
The most go ahead.
Just a little thing. The great error that happens when people think this is a good idea is they look around the government and they say, we have FISMA. FISMA is the worst thing we've ever done to cybersecurity because we're spending billions of dollars on paper. We're not spending it on fixing it. And so when you tell a contractor he has to follow FISMA, you're saying literally you have to go waste a several hundred million dollars or several million dollars if you're a small contractor. That's a viciously stupid thing to do. So right now, when you hear these, the federal government has said you want to do standards, and they point to NIST, that's damaging. But if they point to what Sager's doing, the minimum controls, the hygiene controls, it gets really easy. So it's not just deciding to do the core. It's deciding to do the simple things that cost reasonable prices and actually fix the problem.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Alan Paller. Is the headline, DHS Secretary Warns of Potential Cyber Attacks. And you can read it. Link to the ThreatPost.com site through FederalNewsRadio.com/in-depth. The most important story of the week is selected by Alan Shvatkin. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Come back to Foggy Bottom for homecoming at the George Washington University on February 9th and 10th in 2013. Join GW Men's Basketball on Saturday, February 9th, when they take on the Butler Bulldogs and commemorate the 20th anniversary of their trip to the Sweet 16. The GW Women play Butler on Sunday and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Title IX. Visit gwsports.com/homecoming and get your homecoming tickets today.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
For P150, P150 GA, P150 OK, P150 TN, C250E, C250Q.
Whoever came up with the saying, put your money where your mouth is, must have had some dental work done. Just a filling can cost over $100, and other procedures like crowns and root canals can cost you hundreds more. Without dental insurance, you could be putting a lot of money where your mouth is. But now you can get dental insurance for less than a dollar a day. This isn't a discount plan. This is real dental insurance for over 300 covered procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. For details, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-200-0885. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired. You can see any dentist you choose and never have to pay a deductible. Get the coverage you need for less than a dollar a day and put less money where your mouth is. For free information, call now, 1-800-200-0885. 1-800-200-0885.
WTOP and the Washington Wizards are looking for the best junior broadcaster in D.C. Your child can join me, Dave Johnson, along with Glenn Consor, as we call the Wizards-Houston Rockets game Saturday, February 23rd at Verizon Center. Plus, you'll get 4 tickets to the game and dinner in the press room. To enter, kids between the ages of 8 and 14 can submit an essay telling us why they should become our Wizards junior broadcaster. We're taking entries through January 18th. For all the rules, details, and to enter, visit WTOP.com, search Junior Broadcaster. Good luck.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Alan Paller of the Sands Institute and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. And Alan Shvatkin, your most important federal news story of the week, I must say you have very good taste, chosen from federalnewsradio.com, and the headline is Unions and Industry Groups Spar Over the Impact of Sequestration. And the concept here is essentially, as agencies are trying to figure out exactly who should be cut or what should be cut, or even at a broader level, the noodling through the whole idea of sequestration, groups like yours are kind of at odds with is it fair to say, union groups about exactly how this should be shaped. And my sense is that the CFOs and the other financial leaders at the agencies are kind of hearing it in each ear separately. And I wonder what effect you think that might have on sequestration decisions.
Well, let me one clarification. I don't think we're at odds. We're not suggesting that all of the reduction should come from federal employees and leave the industry or the contracting community harmless. That's never been our position, maybe by some. We recognize that in the austerity environment, whether that comes from other kinds of budget reductions or through the automatic reduction sequestration, everybody is going to be affected. Some in the short term, some in the longer term, some more than others. What we've raised concerns about is the implications from some that, oh, you're not taking enough from them. Leave us alone until you take more from another sector. We've actually come together with the federal employee unions in the past around a number of issues. I think we can do so again. Here's another example of where we have 80% commonality in our view. But sequestration is real. The austerity is real. All of us are going to be affected, and I think it behooves us to focus our attention on how the government can execute its mission, taking a look at the total resources available. Some of that capability is going to come from federal employees. Some of it's going to come from contractor employees. Some of it's going to come from the uniformed military. Some of it's going to come from outside of government altogether. Asking for a choice, pick me over someone else, I think undercuts the fundamental goal of agencies, which is to execute the mission they have using the best available tools for them.
I don't know that I need to choose a particular viewpoint from among the ones that Alan talked about, Alan Paller, but what I take away from his comment is this is just going to be a heck of a mess, and it's not going to get better anytime soon, no matter what it is that Congress winds up deciding to do.
Exactly where my head was. I wouldn't like to be in the position to be making those choices, because you're going to be viciously attacked for no matter what choice you make. So there won't be a right one. There'll just be one where the incoming missiles are bigger or smaller.
Yeah. The decision making process is not going to be easy, of course. And my guess is it's going to go right up to the end like it did every other time recently for every other kind of decision. And we've talked about on this program, both my conversations with each of you separately, the uncertainty is as much the problem as anything else. And I guess maybe we can take some comfort in the fact that we have a little certainty now, I guess,
Carter,
that it will last until – that we won't know anything until the first week of March. I mean, is that a reasonable assumption on my part, do you think?
Right. But that lack of predictability is as damaging as whatever answer might be. Many of our member companies and many of the agencies that we've talked to would rather take the pain now and be able to deal with it than to continue to defer a decision down the road without knowing what's going to take place.
Well, and
not a plan.
Yeah, that's very true. And I'm not trying to make light of the fact that the certainty that we have is sufficient or desirable. I certainly don't mean to suggest that. What does this mean, in your view, Alan, for people who are trying to make decisions about what's going to happen in your area of expertise or any other area of expertise in a really short period of time? Because it's not just sequestration. It's also agency budgets run out the end of March. No, I can't imagine we're going to see any activity at all on FY 2014 numbers as long as these other issues are still floating around in the ether.
The people who are most in trouble are the ones who are trying to decide, in your business, Alan, the people are trying to decide how to allocate the resources they have, whether to keep people on board who are not on contract right now. Should I keep them to make it through? And I think you're going to see a radical acceleration of layoffs. I think that the main thing that will happen is between now and March, if there was a trickle in the last 2 months, you're going to start to see it a slope change.
We're hearing a plan already about that from the Pentagon this afternoon, and I'll tell you more about that in a few minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Gentlemen, a terrific Federal News Countdown. Thank you both very much for coming in today. Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and Alan Paller of the Sands Institute. Drive carefully as you leave here, because we have this horrible snowstorm that is going to destroy the commute this afternoon. So be very careful as you make your way out of here, gentlemen.
Thank you
very much for being here today. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. All of the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown are linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.